Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, and behind me is our guest for today, Kale. Hey, Kale.
Hey, how are you?
And we've been practicing this. I turned to talk to Kale, and of course, I'm not looking at him. As you can tell, Kale is remote. He's from North Carolina, and he's calling in via link, connecting in via link, and Kale's going to run all the demos today from North Carolina. So just to set up what's going on, and I'm going to constantly turn around and look at Kale, because when I talk to people, I like to look at them. In reality, I need to be looking at my computer, but I'm going to constantly do this and talk to Kale. So just so you know, that's what's going to happen. So why is Kale on the show? Kale is on the show to show us the debugger canvas. So Kale, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us about the debugger canvas and what is it? Why was it invented? What problem is it trying to solve? And then you'll show us lots of demos.
All right. Well, thanks, Robert. Debugger Canvas is the publicly released version of a long line of research in spatial layout of code that we've been doing at Microsoft. And we collaborated with Brown University on this particular project because Brown University's also been doing some research and work on spatial layout of code. You may have heard of Code Bubbles, which was a tool for Eclipse that came out of Brown University. And in Microsoft Research, we had been working on a tool called Code Canvas, which is, you know, for Microsoft technologies, C#, VB, you know, anything like that. And so we collaborated together to bring you Debugger Canvas, which merges ideas from both of those tools into one.
So you're you're with Microsoft Research, just so everyone knows, right?
Yeah, that's right. I'm with Microsoft Research. I'm a research software design engineer, or RSDE. Basically, the only difference, there's two types of people in Microsoft Research. There's researcher and there's research software developer. And they usually work in teams or pairs. And basically, researcher focuses more on academic publications, and the research developer focuses on making research prototypes to gather data and things like that.
Cool. And you're in North Carolina. Exactly. Where in North Carolina?
I'm in Wilmington, North Carolina.
Cool.
It's a small little town pretty close to the beach, but I'm actually from Washington State. I actually grew up near Microsoft headquarters, and so I'm a mountains guy, but you know, the beach is all right, too.
How are the mountains in Virginia? I'm sorry, in North Carolina. Sorry.
Yeah, well, there's not many.
You said beach.
I have to drive about 4 hours to get to any hill at all.
Okay. You said beach, and I immediately thought Virginia for some reason. Sorry.
No, Virginia's very nice, but no, it's hot here, though. It's nice. It's not rainy like Seattle.
Today, it's not rainy either. We've had nice weather all week long.
I don't believe it.
No, it's totally true.
But yeah, so I'm going to be showing you demos. So to let the people, the audience know, I am connected to Robert here via link, or they used to be Office Communicator. He is sharing his screen there in the studio, and I'm going to be remote controlling his mouse on the screen that you see on the television.
Yep.
So if this works, it's a testament to all of the Microsoft stack of technologies making this possible.
It has worked fully 50% of the time we've tried it, so we're very optimistic.
Yeah.
So Debugger Canvas is an add-on to Visual Studio 2010?
Yep, it is. It requires Visual Studio 2010, Service Pack 1, Ultimate.
Okay.
This is because we use some of the components that ship only with Ultimate. Particularly some of the components that are responsible for parsing code and decompiling code to draw their architecture diagrams. We just piggyback off of that. And the reason we did that, unfortunately, it makes us require Ultimate, but it made the project possible in the first place, because otherwise we would have had to write our own decompilers for whatever, as many languages as we want to support. Obviously, we probably would have started with C#. And you know, that would have taken up all of our resources just doing C#. But since we piggybacked on Ultimate, we get C#, VB, and any other language that their Architecture Explorer supports right out of the box.
Okay, cool. All right, let's see it.
All righty. So I'm going to close this little window here. You all can go to my blog, just search for Kale Rowan, or you can also just search for Debugger Canvas to get it. The blog you see behind me here just explains that Debugger Canvas 1.1 was released earlier this year, at the beginning of the year, and we've had real good feedback about it so far. But I will show you the demo now. So here, I'm going to start off, I'm going to show you two code bases. One of them is a Raytracer program. It comes with the parallel extensions for Microsoft .NET Framework. It's a free sample. You can just search for parallel extensions and parallel extras on Microsoft, and you'll find this Raytracer program plus a lot of others. It's just an example that they use to show you what kind of cool parallel things you can do in .NET 4. But the reason I'm using it is because we added this really cool feature in version 1.1 of Debugger Canvas that lets you see multiple threads side by side on the canvas. And this really, I think, hits home why Debugger Canvas is better than a regular debugger. Let me start off by showing you what it would look like to debug this Raytracer program in the regular Visual Studio debugger experience. So I have a breakpoint on this function called render parallel. I'm actually going to put it here inside the, well, I'll put it here for render row. This Raytracer, if anybody knows, it just it can run in parallel, and it'll call this render row for every thread, and it subdivides the work it has to do onto the different threads based on how many CPUs your machine has. So I hit play. Now I don't see it, so I think Robert has to slide it over.
I have to slide it over from my primary monitor to the secondary monitor.
All right, there we go. So here's this little Raytracer app. Again, it's just the free public sample. And Robert has 8 cores on his machine, but since our screen is actually kind of small, I'm going to move this down to 4 cores. It doesn't really matter how many, but you'll get a good sense of why this is awesome. So, all right, so I'm going to start Raytracer. It's going to use parallel.4, which isn't relevant to Debugger Canvas. It's just part of the parallel extensions, to divvy up onto 4 different processes all this code. So in my regular Visual Studio experience, let me actually full screen this. My magic full screen shortcut, come on. There we go. And I'm just going to hit F11 here. I'm just going to step in. And I'm going to keep hitting this. And we're going to see, I don't know if you just noticed, but we ran the same code twice. And the reason that is because the original code got preempted by the second thread. And so every time you see the instruction pointer jump back up, it's because Visual Studio has no built-in support for really making it easy to understand which thread is executing which line of code. You can open the threads window, but even if I did that, it's not going to really help. So as I'm hitting F11 here, you can see we're just jumping all over the place. And even we get preempted in the middle of constructors. You know, one thread is initializing the specter thing, while another thread is initializing array. And it's just, if you can follow it, you know, I applaud you. But most people would not have a fun time trying to debug this thing. So what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to turn on Debugger Canvas. And you can even do this in the middle of a debug session. And now every time a piece of code gets executed, it will create a new bubble for it. We use the term fragments, but you know, code bubbles use the term bubble. And so now I'm going to do the exact same thing. I'm going to hit F11. I'm just going to keep hitting it. And you can see that it subdivides the canvas into rows based on the thread that's calling the code. So on our small screen, the layout is kind of cramped. So I'm going to move this over here to make it look a little better. But every thread gets its own color. And I'll actually zoom out here a little bit too. And so we've got, you know, an orange thread, green thread, blue thread, purple thread. And I'm just going to keep hitting F11 here. And you can see for each thread which fragments it calls, which functions it calls. You can see the connectors between them to, you know, give you an idea of who called who, but we generally try to lay things out from left to right. Again, I'm going to move this guy down here. I'm going to select these two bubbles and move them down here out of the way, or else they're going to start hitting each other. But as I hit F11, I hope you can see that it's much simpler to know which thread is calling which code, and it's not jumping you around too bad.
That's awesome.
So another thing you can do, another thing that's hard in the regular Visual Studio experience is seeing which values of variables are on which thread. Again, you'd have to go open the threads window and switch between. But here, every bubble has this little button to the right that shows the locals for that invocation. So here, this one's not so interesting because it just shows the X and a Y. But if I show you the render row method, in fact, let me start it over. Let me close that canvas. I'm going to restart. And Robert may have to slide it over again. I'm going to do the same thing, though. I'm going to say parallel. I'm going to say four threads. Maybe you should even do three threads, just because our screen is a little bit small here. All right, so here we go. So here, Y is the row. So I'm going to hit F11 again. I'm just going to keep on hitting it. And you can see our four threads being spun up. Let me zoom out a little. And head F11 again, just so you can see the different threads executing, and I'll let it branch out a little bit once it starts getting into its inner calls. There we go. All right. Now, why I wanted to restart was because when you start out with the breakpoints on the left, it shows you which row it's on. And I want to show you that you can sort of learn how parallel.for works by examining the variables in Debugger Canvas. So here, this one's starting out with row 0. This one's starting out with row 200. Let me expand that guy. That guy is row 100. And that guy is row 300. So you can sort of see now that it partitioned it out into four different areas. And as I keep going, let me just hit F5 here. Now here, Y is 1 and 2. And then now we're going to jump down to this other thread here. Actually, I'm not sure why we're in a fourth. Interesting. It looks like the scheduler did not reuse the same thread to do its original task of going from 0 to 99. So I haven't run into that before on my machine, but I also only have four cores on my machine, and so four cores and four threads usually means it sticks to only having four threads at any one time. So apparently on your machine, I just learned that parallel.for can actually create new threads, and it doesn't always reuse a thread for those tasks. But I think that's useful.
And you would never have known that by just looking at the code the way you did before. Right.
I would never even have got this far, to be honest. I would have slid the slider to 1, and I would have debugged that way, and I would have just held on if I needed to debug it with multiple threads. But now that I have this thing up, let me show you another feature that we have with this little pop-up window here. I can take a snapshot of these variables. So when Y was 3, stride was 1200, and I can just click this little camera icon, and now those are persistent, and this little gray section won't change. So, this is the value of those variables as of 2:01 p.m. So now if we can get back into this execution again, here we go. I just hit F5, and it called into render row again using the same thread with Y of 4. And stride of 0, and let's see what happens here when we, this time stride is going to be 1600. So just little things like this, you can compare and you can drill down into variables. This is like a little mini watch window. And I'm trying to drill down, but for some reason the drill down isn't working. Might be something with remote. Mm. I'm not sure why that is. But normally you can drill down and actually, none of my mouse clicks are working, Robert.
Really?
Yeah, I'm trying to drag bubbles, and I can't click on the menu.
Excellent. Let's see if I can.
Can you even click on menus in VS? Is VS hung? Is that what it is, or is the remote session doing something funky?
Huh. I don't know. No.
Well, all right, interesting. I'm not sure if that's a technical difficulty with our remoting or if it's an issue with VS. Try killing VS, and we'll try to open up a new one. And actually, we can switch to a different program, too, because the ray tracer is pretty simplistic, and I think I've shown so far what I wanted to show you, which was how awesome it is to visualize your code on a canvas rather than jumping through a bunch of editors when you're hitting F11. So we'll let you kill it.
So kill VS?
Yeah, just kill VS, I guess.
I'm trying.
Well, you can open up a new VS.
Yeah.
You've got 8 cores on that machine. I know you do, so, you know, should be able to run 2 instances of VS.
You can never have too many Visual Studios open.
Well, that's not true, but...
Visual Studio is busy.
Ah, boy.
I can always
Taskman, kill dead end.
I did Control Alt Delete and now I'm seeing nothing. Ah, there we go. Task Manager. And where are we? DevEnv, I've got 2 of those. I'll kill them both. Actually, I really only need to kill 1, right? So,
yeah.
There's new Visual Studio. So you still have control, right?
Well, here, I'll drag and drive again.
Okay.
All right, so I'll open this little paint program. The paint program is, in a way, more interesting than the ray tracer program because the ray tracer program is actually written well, and it's still hard to debug it when you're talking about multiple threads and things, but the code itself is pretty well laid out. And Debugger Canvas is not only good for nice code, it's good for just nasty, hairy code like this paint program, which is just... That was just a really nasty, horrible implementation. I don't know if it was, you know, an intern project or if it was written by someone else in a, you know, competing company. You know, certainly wasn't written here. It was some code that we got somewhere, some free code. So this paint program has a bug in it. So I'll show you what the bug is. And again, you might have to drag it over here.
There it is.
All right. Now this is a pretty typical paint program. You know, I got a pencil, I can erase, I have a line. Now a line, normally, if I move my mouse up, you're gonna expect the line to follow my mouse, but it does this ghosting thing, kind of like old, you know, Windows 95 when a window would hang or the desktop would hang and it'd get this ghost behind it. But when I let up, I just let off the mouse there and it fixes itself. So that's weird. So it's doing something when I'm dragging that is keeping that ghost around, but then it's doing something extra in the mouse up, which gets rid of it. So I want to figure out what is going on. I want to try to find this bug. So I'm gonna break all, and I'm gonna use IntelliTrace to do this. And I'm gonna make sure that it's recording call information. All right, it is. And IntelliTrace is nice. Again, it has nothing really to do with Debugger Canvas. So I just like using cool new features. And so I'm gonna switch over here to calls view. And see, I can see how my mouse moves, my mouse exited, and all this kind of stuff. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a new canvas. I'm going to go to debugger canvas, create new canvas. And then I'm going to go up here and I'm going to find where I released the mouse, because I know that that is when it fixed itself. All right, there's mouse released. Well, here's mouse moved. I know my mouse moved is just not working well. So I'm going to drag that mouse moved over to the canvas. So if you did see what it did there, it automatically populated my canvas with everything that was called by mouse moved.
And it knows that because that's all being captured by IntelliTrace.
That's right. Right. So I didn't have to set any breakpoints or do anything like that. And that just, there it is. There's all the code that was called as a result of that mouse moved. I can do the same thing with mouse released. In fact, if I wanted to compare the two, let me go full screen mode here again. Let me go create another canvas. You can create as many of these as you want. And they're just tab documents, so I can drag them around. I can do this kind of thing. Let me get my IntelliSense window back. I can find out where that is. Let's see, IntelliTrace. IntelliTrace calls. All right, now here I want my mouse released. So I'm going to drag him down here. All right, IntelliTrace, you can go away. So now that I'm in here, I can see, I can try to compare the two. I can see if there's, you know, code that's being called by one and not the other. And I'm going to just sort of play around with some features here. And maybe if you want, even you could jump in, because we've got some really sort of step-by-step videos out there on our DevLab site that shows you feature by feature walkthroughs, and it's scripted. It goes you real slow. It's like sort of a course, you know, a how-to video. But it doesn't tell you anything about, you know, design decisions or how someone would really use this in the real world. And so I'm gonna sort of pretend I'm trying to fix this bug and use some of the features of Debugger Canvas as I'm going. So here's what I would do if I was starting off is I'd sort of look at this code to see what happens. Okay, mouse released. You know, I'm reading here. It calls this input element thing. That's really uninteresting to me, so I'm just going to prune that away. This define points thing, that's pretty irrelevant to me too. This construction complete thing is interesting. It calls some methods, and I wonder if this one up here calls the same things. So again, here's my mouse moved. It looks like it has two paths. You know, it does something with a hovering prototype. I'm not sure what that is. Again, it gets input element. That's not interesting. But here it says, you know, if left button is pressed, then the mouse dragged. So this mouse move obviously happens all the time, whether I'm dragging a line or not. But the mouse drag is all I'm interested in. So I'm gonna get rid of this hovering over this make hovering prototype stuff. Let me get rid of that. And then let's see what else we got here. Looks like it calls something else. Now, where is that? Now, I can hover over this line, but again, you're on a small screen, so I can't see where the end of it is. So I will click on it, and it'll turn it red. And now I can see that call chain. So this code that executed, whether or not I had the mouse held down or not, is not really interesting to me. So I'm gonna prune that away. I'm going to prune these things away. And in fact, I can just hold down Control and drag a box and select multiple things at once here. I don't need any of these things. I'm going to right-click. I'm going to say Close All Selected. That's one of the features that you won't see in the video and you might not know about. But I'm going to prune that away. Now I see, you know, here's some more orphans and things like that. And here we get down here to Construction Continuing. So this is different than my Construction Complete. They both call set temporary object, but this one has someone commented out this remove at children. So I think that's the bug right there actually. And so I can actually edit these bubbles right on the canvas here. Not sure if I edit continue turned on. Let's see if you do. General, do you have enable edit and continue? It is in here, is it not? Are you on a 64-bit or are you 32?
Yeah, 64-bit operating system.
Ah, well, yeah, and it continue doesn't work on 64-bit. Right. But I can stop. I can go here and I can stop debugging. And then I can edit code directly in these bubbles here. So I actually never have to go back to the file if
so
I don't
you,
want to.
You can add code, you get full IntelliSense and the whole
works?
Yeah,
I can add code, I can do, you know, I can type in here,
nice.
Well, I don't know, drawing canvas and just copying, you know, what the other stuff has. I can do anything I want in here. It's a full-blown text editor. And, you know, it makes room when you add code, when you add lines, you know, it gets rid of it. When you backspace over stuff. So I'm going to see if this fixes the problem. So here what I'll do is instead of using teletrace as my start, I'm going to just put a breakpoint on here. Again, it's a full editor, so I can just click in the gutter. And then I'm going to restart this again. I'm just going to hit F5. Did it show up on your other monitor?
Yeah, now it did.
Okay. All right, so here we go. Click on my. I'm gonna start this, and wham, I get construction continuing. So now I will show you some features of how I debug if I started with a breakpoint. Well, actually, sorry, this is the one I came up on. So let me just get rid of this, these guys. So as I hit this, as I'm here on a brand new canvas based on this breakpoint, I can navigate in several different ways. I can say I can view my call stack. So this is the traditional way. Let's see, debug, Windows, call stack. And we are integrated into the rest of the Visual Studio windows, like call stacks. So if I double click here and go up, instead of bringing me to the file, it actually plops a bubble down right to the left of the thing that, you know, was called by it. And I can do it again going up. So that's one way. Let me close these guys. And one more thing, when you select in a bubble, we automatically move the call stack to the current frame that you clicked in. And this is beneficial because of the hover over tooltips. So here, if I want to know, you know, what the children.count is, or say what temporary object is, well, it's not going to tell me what temporary object is for some reason, but it'll tell me what that is. If I want to view the hover over data tips for another method fragment, then I click in there, and now those become in scope because we switched the current call frame to that. The regular Visual Studio editors have the exact same issue. If you're not in the current scope on the call stack, then you won't be able to use hover over data tips, and so we made it easy just by clicking in there to change the scope for you. So that's using the call stack. Another way, if you don't want to, is we give you these little buttons here. So this button jumps left in the call stack. This button, you know, jumps right. And this little one jumps all the way back, as far back as we can go before we hit user code. In this case, there's not very far because mouse move is called by the UI framework. So that's one way to navigate up and down the call stack. Another way is this little breadcrumb bar here. This will show you all of the peers, all the peer definitions. So mouse moved, you know, this class also defined mouse press, mouse drag. I just click on one and it will open up the bubble next to it. So that's another way to navigate around. Another one is find all references. Let's say I want to see anybody else who called construction continuing. Does anybody else call that? So I'll right click on it. I'll say find all references. And down here, I can double click on these and it will pop up new bubbles and still keep me within my current Canvas context. Let's see, some more things. We have a mini map up here, which tends to not really be necessary in experience. But it's there if you want it. You can see everything that's on your canvas.
Yep, and you can navigate around using that, right?
Yep, you can navigate around using it. Yep. Cool. And it's live, it's up to date. You know, if I grab this guy and I move him around, you can see it's the mini map moving around as well. Let's see. I showed you the ability to click on a link and see the whole call chain. This makes it easy to, because we don't have the best of layout, to be honest. We use just sort of rectilinear routing, which, you know, it could be a lot better. We would like to make it better. But in the meantime, if you're really having trouble finding, you know, which bubbles call which, you can click on a line and it will highlight in red the entire call chain up and down that particular stack. You know, that's pretty much it in a nutshell. If you want to edit code directly on the canvas, like from scratch, you can do that actually. For example, well, another way to navigate is by code search, and I'm going to use this to show you how you can edit code on a canvas from scratch without debugging. So here I just right clicked on the canvas and I can type in something like move, and then I get mouse moved, you know, that's the only one that seems to show up, and I double click on it and it brings me up a new bubble. And those are the main navigation features. Any questions so far? I can show you one more cool thing about an option we have to reuse or not reuse bubbles.
Okay.
And I'll get into how that's relevant. But do you have any questions on this stuff, like, that you think users would be interested to know about?
I think this is great. It's a much more visual understanding of what's going on, and makes it. It seems way easier to know where you are, and I love the ability to go up and down the call stack, just starting at any individual bubble. Mm-hmm. So it gives a great view into what's going on in an application.
Okay. So let me show you an option we have. So here, so far we've been duplicating bubbles. Every time you call into a new piece of code, we've been showing a new bubble for it. But let me close this solution here. And I'm going to open up a recursive program, just a little quick sort. I'm gonna hit F11 in this guy. All right, so here we are. So here's Quicksort. For, you know, everyone should know how Quicksort works, but for those who don't, it just takes a bunch of data and sorts it. So here we have data, which is 10 things. It's unsorted integers, and we're going to sort them. And Quicksort works by divide and conquer. It splits up the numbers and then recalls itself recursively on every branch. And so as I step into this, just again hitting F11, you will actually, I'll step over partition because it's not too interesting. You'll see that Quicksort calls itself. So here we are again. We're in another instance of this of Quicksort. You'll see it here, and then the exact same code here. So normally in standard Visual Studio, you know, you're not going to see the code twice. And in our first release of Debugger Canvas, we also did not show you the code twice. We would reuse the same bubble over and over again. And this meant you'd have to navigate up and down the call stack in order to view what the variables were. For example, if I want to know what, you know, left is in this instance, you know, it happens to be zero. Which one changes? Okay, so right changes. But in this instance, right is 9. So in this way, you can view the different values based on which call it was, which recursive call it was, simultaneously side by side. And there was no way to do that before in regular VS. And there was no way to do it in even Debugger Canvas version 1.0. So in addition to supporting multiple threads, this was one of the key drivers of why we added the ability to show new fragments every time the same code was executed. But you can turn this off if you want. So let me show what happens when you do that. So if I go to Debug, Debugger Canvas Options, and I'm going to say reuse bubbles when content is the same. So what this will do is this will quit popping up new bubbles every time the code is called, and instead it will just reuse the same bubble. So here we go, and it didn't add a new one. And the reason why that might be useful is because if my memory serves, partition calls swap several times. And let me show you what happens when we have the reuse turned off. So I'm going to go back to showing a new bubble for every time we step in. And this partition calls swap. Okay, so swap doesn't really do much. It just swaps two values. I'm still hitting F11. Come into us another swap. There we go. All right. So now I called swap again. So now I see swap again. And this is less than useful. I don't really need to see swap again.
Exact same code.
But this is useful, you know, with Quicksort. But there was no good way for us to tell, you know, when someone might want to see the code duplicated versus when they wouldn't. So here I'm saying partition again, which may be useful, may not. But again, I'm saying swap. So the reason that originally we basically always had this hard coded to check true, is because in Code Canvas, the idea is not just showing you what you're currently debugging in, but the idea is to show you all of your code, and so you can see all the relationships between it. And there, we want to have spatial meaning to where code is. You know, you might have your UI code in the upper left and your database code down the bottom, and, you know, maybe some web services code over to the right. And so duplicating code there sort of confuses the issue about if you just pop up new bubbles for every time you're interested in a piece of code, then how does it actually have meaning? And so in Code Canvas, for example, every time you'd call into the swap, you'd always call into the same swap. So let me illustrate what that would look like in something like Code Canvas or something like the first version of Debugger Canvas. Every time you call a swap, it would just bring you right back here. And so now when I hit F11 a bunch, I'm basically seeing not so much the control flow. I'm not so interested in the control flow for this debugging session, but I'm more interested in what portions of my software are being invoked and sort of, as almost like a code coverage is a hot path of, I want to know which parts of my software are being invoked. I don't really need to know so much the values. I just want to know where the instruction pointer is bouncing around, and that sort of thing, if any of that makes sense. But that's two different ways you can use Debugger Canvas, either by reusing bubbles when content is the same or not.
So when you reuse bubbles, is there the ability to look at each instance of swap and see what the variables were, or is that not saved?
So you can, kind of. There's a couple ways to do it. So here, let me get back into swap. So we can use our little friend, the pop-up guy, and you can also pin him, by the way.
Okay.
So if you want to move it, like say I want the variables up here, I can do that. So here I can snapshot. Right.
Okay.
So here we saw that feature earlier.
So you'd have to snapshot each time. You can't navigate from one to the other like you were doing before.
Right.
Okay.
That's correct. But every time a swap came in, if I wanted, I could create another snapshot.
Right.
And now I actually have two of them. So
that
would be one way to do it. If we're talking about recursion, then again, you could use the regular call stack window. Windows call stack. So here, for example, quicksort is being called several times. So if I wanted to see the values, at this instance versus this
so
instance
that's,
versus
that's
this
the way
instance,
to do it.
Then
so,
I could do it that way.
Okay.
But that only works really if, it's because I have three instances of quicksort on the stack. I don't have multiple instances of swap, even though swap was called several times.
Okay.
So if you're trying to understand which, if your goal is understanding a large set of code and how it relates to each other, it may be better to not spawn new bubbles every time. It may be better to only have one bubble per piece of code and drag them around so that they make sense. Kind of like I was doing with the paint program originally, I'm pruning things that aren't interesting and I'm laying them out so it sort of makes sense. But if you're really just wanting to sort of view data flow, then it makes more sense to spawn new bubbles every time the code is called, because that helps more with data flow and visualizing, recursion and things like that. One of our research goals going forward with things like Code Canvas is finding this balance of where you want spatial meaning to your code on the canvas versus when you just are interested in this one particular debug session and the location of the code doesn't have a meaning. Whether the code is to the left or to the right, you don't really care. You just want to view what code is executed and how many times. Versus, you're going to be in this canvas for a while. You want to drag code to where you're going to remember sort of, several related pieces of code or grouped next to each other. Then you would not want to duplicate the bubbles so much.
Great. This is very, really, really cool stuff. So it's freely available. People can go to your blog and download it and play with it. It works in Ultimate. So if you have Ultimate, then obviously get this and use it. If you want to check it out, in addition to the rest of Ultimate, you could always get the trial of Ultimate and play around with it there,
That's
right?
That's actually what I do. In fact, this is really good for debugging into Tailspin Toys, which we like to use, and which one of our other videos on Dev Labs illustrates. And so if you search for the pre-packaged virtual machine, Visual Studio Ultimate, it comes with Tailspin already installed.
Right.
All you have to do is install Debugger Canvas on it, and you're ready to go.
Cool. So what are your thoughts for this and Visual Studio 11?
It all depends on how much demand we get, really, from customers. The business units need to know if people really want this, in future versions and different SKUs, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So far, this is a way, from the research side, it was a way to dip our toe in the water of letting people see code fragments on a canvas in a two-dimensional space, and they can start thinking about, we want you to start thinking about, do I want to duplicate bubbles? Do I not? Do I want to have spatial meaning for where they are? How long do I want this canvas to last? Do I want to work full time in this canvas? I didn't get a chance to show you developing code first in it, but basically all you do is right click to get that little search box again. And you type in main, because you're always going to have a main. And then once you have main on your brand new canvas, you can start typing in it and going from there. And that's how you do it without starting a new debug session. let me just illustrate real quick here. You'd go to, I'm not debugging, but I can still go to Debugger Canvas. I can create a new canvas. I can right click. I can type main. I can hit enter. And now I have a bubble to start with. So, I can go to other functions. I can define new ones. You have refactoring in here. So if I want to say, foo, I can use this little diddly daddly thing down here. I can generate a method stub for it. So now I, can expand it and stuff. And if I want to see foo by itself, hold on, you. There's foo, stuff like this. So if you wanted to, you could play around with it. We specifically made Debugger Canvas only targeted to debugging sessions because, for one, it eliminates a lot of the research questions of how should a canvas behave when you're debugging in it 24/7. And for two, it's just a really great tool for understanding code.
Right.
So it was a good fit of creating something small enough that we could get it out there and get our toes in the water. But, opening the door to research on spatial development of code, like Code Canvas and things like that going forward.
Well, that's awesome. So let's bring you back up so people can see you again. Thanks so much for coming on. I think this worked pretty well.
Thank you.
For remoting in and all the various issues we had, but I think it worked out really well.
Yeah, I think it did too.
So you guys should go get this, give it a shot, let us know what you think. You can get back to Kale directly. You can post on the Toolbox episode page, and Kale will look at that. And love to hear your thoughts on this. Kale, thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me.
You're going to be up here on campus sometime this summer.
Yes, I come on campus actually quarterly. I fly back quarterly.
So let me know next time you're here. We'll have you live in the studio.
All right.
Or maybe we'll.
Maybe I can show you some stuff on Code Canvas at that time.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. All right. Hope you enjoyed this, and we'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.